Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Paul Lawrence, and today's conversation is with Mary Peters. Mary's the administrator of the Federal Highway Administration in the U.S. Department of Transportation. Joining us in our conversation is Dave Abel.
Mary, near and dear to the heart of people who are in Washington is traffic congestion. Congestion throughout the country, it's not just in Washington, continues to worsen. What actions are FHWA planning to address this issue in the long term?
David, I think you make an excellent point. And the most important thing to people when they're dealing with congestion is reliability and predictability. They want to know if they leave their home at a certain time that they're going to be able to get to their destination within a defined period of time, even though that may be longer than they'd like. And they want to know that they can do that day after day, that it isn't going to change dramatically from one day to the next. There isn't a single solution, but what we're working on with Federal Highway Administration and with state and local governments is to use technology to improve transportation. In other words, get more information so that if there are breakdowns or congestion points, we're getting that information out quickly. We're clearing that incident quickly. We're letting the public know what to expect when they get out and enter the transportation system. But also we can use tools such as ramp meterings to make sure mainline freeways are running more smoothly by metering how many people enter that freeway and at what point. But we also do need to consider capacity expansion or building new segments of highways as part of the solution as well. So I'd like to say there's no silver bullet, but there are many ways that we can attack congestion.
One of the things that's always interesting to me when I'm stuck in traffic, I look and I'm in the car by myself and I look and I see lots of other people in the car by themselves. And it just seems that the congestion has a lot to do with the increase of vehicular traffic. We hear a lot about multimodal management of transportation. What's your view and the state DOT's view on road transportation together with rail, air, and other modes to be able to ease traffic congestion?
I think we have to use all those solutions, and that's been perhaps part of the problem in the past is we've looked at these issues at a single mode focus. We've only looked at highways, we've only looked at rail or transit, and I think we have to look at the interaction of those systems, and really what it is a transportation system, not a highway system or a transit system or rail system. And for example, I'll often ask people to get from where you left your home today to where you are now, how many modes of transportation did you use? And most of us have used more than one. If you consider walking a mode, and I do, most of us have used more than one mode of transportation. So what the customer wants, whether we're shipping freight or whether we need to get ourselves as a passenger from one place to another, is how do I get there? And customers don't want to worry about the interaction from modes. What we have a responsibility to do as transportation professionals is make that transition from one mode to another as seamless and as efficient as possible.
How are the views of multimodal transportation handled within the Department of Transportation with your responsibility for FHWA and some of the other modes are handled in other administrations and other organizations within the DOT. How is that interaction handled in the organization?
It's something that Secretary Mineta has placed great importance on, and we really have an opportunity to work with each other and across modal lines. Other members of the surface modes of transportation, in addition to myself, are Jenna Dorn with the Transit Administration and Alan Rutter with the Federal Rail Administration, and also Joe Clapp, who works with Federal Motor Carriers, the trucking industry. We call ourselves the surfers. And we work together quite often on issues that relate to surface transportation because it should be, again, transparent to the users. So the Secretary has really emphasized collaboration across the modes.
I'm just curious from sort of a non-theoretical basis. You described in terms of what could be done to do away with congestion, sort of capacity expansion. But to the extent that that's not possible, I'm sort of drawn on your experience in Arizona. I imagine it's a big state with lots of places to build roads. But to the extent where it's not possible in some urban areas, what can be done? At some point, capacity eventually can't be expanded. So then what happens?
Well, I think you have to look at it on a demand and supply mentality to look at it that way. One way is to reduce demand. Get people to telecommute, get people to carpool, get people to use a variety of things so you're reducing the demand wherever you can. But studies show that there are only incremental differences that we can make in terms of reducing demand, particularly with population growing, vehicle ownership growing. So the other way is to increase the efficiency of the system you have, especially where, as you said, it isn't feasible to add new capacity to it. Ways you can do that, there are two types of congestion, recurring, meaning that every day there's too much traffic for the roadway system, and you can mitigate that by having people spread out their commutes or doing other things, but again, some incremental effectiveness, but not a lot. But it's that non-recurring congestion that is the most frustrating. There's a crash, emergency vehicles have to get there, a car breaks down, or there's a weather system or something else that causes non-recurring congestion. In that case, having technology that tells tells us exactly what's happening so we can get the right emergency response vehicles out there and get that incident cleared as quickly as possible. That will help substantially in reducing that non-recurring congestion.
Well, that cues up my next question here about the intelligent transportation system. Could you tell us about that?
Yeah, and what all intelligent transportation system means is applying technology to help us with transportation. Knowing what's going on the roadway system is critically important if we're going to take a systems operation focus, which I think we have to do. So there are things called loop detectors that are absolutely transparent to the user, but they're buried in the pavement that tell us, is the traffic moving or is it not? There are also cameras on the system that allow us to actually see what's going on the system. Ramp metering that I mentioned earlier that helps meter the flow of traffic onto the mainline system. All of that information, real-time information, feeding back to a traffic operations center that allows the operators there to make adjustments in the ramp meters, for example. The freeway's congested, let's meter traffic a little bit slower onto it. There's an incident, let's get that incident cleared. Having real-time information in an operations center that helps us manage the system can be tremendously effective. In the future, we think that vehicles themselves can be both receptors and transmitters of information. As we get more intelligence or more technology in the vehicle itself, the vehicle can send a signal that says, I'm stalled in traffic. There can be very good systems such as crash avoidance systems that can help prevent crashes, which again cause congestion.
How far away are we from that now in terms of, I know where we are in terms of automobiles, but in terms of using those technologies now?
Technology exists today to do all of the things I described. It's a matter of instrumenting the roadway system and instrumenting the cars. And it's part of the dilemma that transportation professionals in state and federal levels face is with a finite amount of revenue, where do you spend it? And in the vernacular that I used to use, you can either spend it on concrete or you can spend it on technology. So part of it is making decisions about where money is best spent and how much money to spend on those various applications. But instrumenting the roadway system is an important part of that. Cars are already coming out with these intelligent systems, can map your route out. You can plug in and say, here's where I want to go, and the vehicle will actually talk to you, lay out a map for you, and tell you where to go. Those systems are available now, and as demand for them increases, I think the price will go down, and you'll see more and more of those in cars. So the technology exists today. It's just a matter of instrumenting the vehicles, instrumenting the system, and then finding a way to consolidate that information and use it in a real-time manner.
Well, you mentioned spending money, and earlier told us that FHWA awards funds to states to improve transportation infrastructure. Could you tell us how that awarding takes place?
Well, 99% of the federal money that goes to state goes out from what we call an apportionment formula. It's a formula that's adopted by Congress and signed by the president, which says how much of the money that's collected nationally goes back to each state. States then determine, as I said earlier, what specific projects to build or how to use that money. But the other 1% of the program is what we call the discretionary program, and there are a variety of ways that program is projects are awarded on that program. Some of it is congestion mitigation and air quality, using money to build high occupancy vehicle lanes or other things that will help move traffic more efficiently. There are borders and corridors programs to help us, especially as NAFTA is implemented, have better routes from our international borders into the interior country. Some not well known, but I think very important programs, the Transportation Enhancement Program that will restore, for example, old rail terminals or other transportation facilities as part of a community development. There's a covered bridge program that restores and maintains covered bridges throughout the country, as well as ferry boat program, because the marine highway is actually part of our responsibility in this nation as our highway system as well.
How are the discretionary money awarded or divvied out?
The discretionary money is awarded in two ways. The way that it happens most often is through congressional earmarking or congressional designations, where members of Congress specify that the money would be spent on certain projects in certain areas. The other way is through merit-based competition, where states or other applicants submit grant applications. They're evaluated based on criteria, and recommendations are made to award the most meritorious projects.
And as part of that selection criteria, portability across the different states in terms of a good idea?
It is. For example, on the ferry boat program, obviously not every state is eligible for a ferry boat program, but more than you would imagine when you consider that navigable rivers are often eligible for those. But we try to make sure that the money, again, goes to the most meritorious projects, and we try to ensure that it's part of a larger mobility plan for that region. So if a ferry boat is going to take the place, for example, of having to build another bridge across a scenic river, that may be the better option.
Are there any other particularly innovative programs that have come through this?
I think one of our most innovative program is a program that tries to deal with this whole issue of congestion that we've been discussing through creating incentives for people either not to drive or creating incentives for building projects. One of the most exciting concepts that I think we have on the future and is part of this program is a demand-based pricing program where, let's say we have excess capacity on a high occupancy vehicle lane, we could allow folks to use that excess capacity in a single occupant vehicle if they were willing to pay a fee for doing that. And the fee would increase. As the congestion increased, the fee would go up so that it would be such that you would divert some users away from it and could keep free-flowing traffic. Those kind of innovative programs, I think, can be a part of the future of way we manage transportation.
That's a good stopping point. We've got to go to a break. Come back with us in a few minutes as we continue talking about management with Mary Peters of the Federal Highway Administration. This is the Business of Government Hour.